Now stay tuned for To Your Health, where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall, by Be Vital Healthcare, optimize health and performance, and by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. And now, here are your hosts, Mike McBee and nurse practitioner Melanie Dorian.
Hey, everybody. This is Mike McBee. I'm with my co-host, Melanie Dorian. She's a nurse practitioner, functional integrative medicine. We are also talking this morning with Ryan Lee. He is a baker, local baker. His wares are found at the Ix Market. That's the city market. Move to the Ix Park. Ryan, how are you this morning?
Thank you. I am doing so well. I always feel so clean after the rain. It's been pouring the last, couple of hours and days. So
right.
It feels nice. I feel
after the rain. Really nice.
Yeah, thank you.
Great for the fields too, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So Ryan, let's jump right in because I'm a huge fan, and full disclosure to our listeners, I'm completely in love with Ryan's breads and I try and eat it every week. So I've been a huge fan of Ryan's baked goods, especially his sourdough bread. And Ryan is the owner of Homestead Oven, and it's a gluten-free cottage bakery in Charlottesville, Virginia. So we're going to jump right in, Ryan, with what is your story? How did you start getting into this and you started your bakery?
Yeah, I guess it depends how far back you want to go. But I really, about 5 years ago, I had the amazing opportunity to be an intern at Spikenard Honeybee Sanctuary in Floyd, Virginia. It's this beautiful honeybee sanctuary nestled in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And in addition to learning how to take care of the bees, I was also introduced to the amazing world of sourdough baking. And at that time, I was still gluten-free. I've been gluten-free for about 20 years. And some of the folks that work on the farm, they've been doing, just conventional gluten sourdough baking for a long time. And I was just really inspired. I was like, I know I can somehow bring these two worlds together of traditional sourdough baking and gluten-free baking. And over the last 5 or 6 years, it's just been a process of experimenting, of, baking lots of terrible bread. And then finally coming up with a recipe that, I was really satisfied with. And, I started sharing with my friends and they were all just very supportive. And I actually had no interest in doing a big cottage bakery, starting out and baking for people, but I enjoyed doing it myself. And I was very satisfied by that. But then people kept telling me, this is the best gluten-free bread I've ever had. This is life-changing. And I was like, really? It's bread. And more and more I started listening to them, and I started really thinking about it. And then I realized I had something just really valuable to offer to the world. And so I got about thinking, how can I do this on a bigger scale? And that's really, really where it started.
So we're tell us a did. Ballpark. Yeah. Ballpark. How many bad breads did you bake?
Oh my gosh. Hundreds. I mean, there was a time I was baking every day. I was baking a loaf every day for months, and most of them sucked. They were dry. They were hard. They were too moist. They were flat. They were too big. It was a process, but
And why I wanted to ask that is that I don't think some people understand the gluten-free baking process is pretty significantly different. Mm-hmm. And having been gluten-free myself because of celiac disease for years, I had at one point, I was trying to bake most of my stuff 10 years ago before mm-hmm. gluten-free products were really decent. And mm-hmm. I don't think our listeners who are not gluten-free or have not experimented appreciate how difficult it is to bake gluten-free stuff. So yeah. I really appreciate your endurance. And that's really what we're going to call it. You have amazing endurance to have the product that you have.
Yeah.
Let's jump right into the process.
I was going to ask you. How did you get the proper crumb? It's all in the crumb.
Yeah. Well, I'll say that I started when I was at the sanctuary, the honeybee sanctuary, there was a loaf of bread that they were making. It was just, you know, conventional gluten-free bread. I just thought, if I could make gluten-free bread taste like this, I would be satisfied. So I kind of had this goal in mind. You know, there's so many different gluten-free grains to choose from. The only problem is, you know, none of them have gluten, so none of them can hold themselves together. You know, you mix flour and water, gluten-free flours and water, and it's just a big soupy mess. So you really have to pick and choose your grains carefully, and you have to figure out how you're going to hold it all together. And in this case, I've started using psyllium husk, which is, it's the husk of the psyllium seed of the plant, and it's a fiber supplement. It's been used for a long time as a fiber supplement, and it turns out it is an amazing binder for gluten-free baking. So really, it's the magic ingredient that holds everything together.
I never made that leap. So my stuff sucked for a long time, I won't lie. Right? Anything that I made that I was trying to make healthier, because you can make something that's not healthy. There's a lot of gluten-free products that are just potato starch and rice starch, or it's just white stuff that spikes your insulin, spikes your blood sugars. It's terrible for you. Right. The thing here is, and I want our listeners to really understand this, is you are making a super high quality. This is not like a white bread here, guys. This is a really dense yet delicious, tasty. You can eat it toasted, not toasted, by itself, with butter, with a condiment on top, but it's really healthy. It is hearty and healthy and tasty.
And we will talk about that in just a moment, folks. You are listening to Your Health right here on 97.9 The Wren. We are talking with Ryan Lee. And what is the name of your company again, Ryan?
It's called the Homestead Oven.
Homestead Oven can be found in the Ix Market each Saturday as well. And we'll talk about how to get in touch with him a little bit later. But Ryan, you were going into your baking of gluten-free and making it taste good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, starting, with that idea of the psyllium as the binder, that way we don't have to use any chemical binders like xanthan gum, which, it can have its place, but my digestion does not tolerate it very well. And I know a lot of people's doesn't. So psyllium, it's very natural. Basically, my process is I get the highest quality organic gluten-free grains, especially millet, buckwheat, and oat. Those are the main three that I use in my bread. And I grind them all here in my home kitchen. I have a little stone mill. So I grind them every week. So they're super fresh. The actual fermentation process for the bread, it's about a three-day process for each loaf of bread. So we start by grinding the grains, and then we make what we call a pre-ferment. So gluten-free sourdough is a fermented bread, and it rises over a long period of time. In this case, at least 24 hours. So generally, I'll start what we call the pre-ferment, which is we get all of the grains, the healthy grains, we grind them, we mix them, we add a little bit of salt, a little bit of organic cane sugar to feed the yeast, a little bit of tapioca starch. I do like to use a little bit of tapioca starch. It really does lighten it up and make a better product, but you just keep that really low comparatively to the whole grains, and it's still a super healthy product. And then the psyllium husk. So that binds everything together. I add a little bit of my sourdough starter. We just start pre-fermenting that for about 24 hours. So that's maybe 20% of the dough. We have this, it's fermenting, it's bubbly, it's ready, and it's ripe. And then that little pre-ferment, I take and I add to the rest of the flour and the rest of the dough after about 24 hours of fermentation. So I mix all that up, I divide all the dough out, and then I let those loaves rise for another 24 hours. And those I actually let rise in the fridge overnight. So we get a long, cool fermentation. And then 24 hours later, they are ready to hit the oven.
Wow, that is a really long process.
Yeah, I hope that didn't sound too complicated. I know it's
into it. Anybody who's experimented with sourdough can really, really appreciate it. I certainly tried years ago when I was doing gluten in with a conventional recipe, and I was not very successful. It's an art. It's an art and a science. So I appreciate all the work and the thought you've put into it. And I want to transition a little bit right now to talk about the grains that you selected. Tell us a little bit more, and I can jump in too, because it's an area of expertise of mine, but into gluten, you know, what it is, why the grains you select don't have it, in the grains that have gluten, and then why gluten-free for some people is better.
Yeah, I think there's a lot, as you understand, a lot of different perspectives on why gluten has become such a difficult thing for some people to deal with and digest. My experience being gluten-free for 20 years, it immediately hits me in a kind of a psychological and an emotional way. I get tired, I get depressed, I get tired, I get foggy, I can't think straight, and my digestion slows down. It just became very clear that I needed to, you know, eat something different. And so I started, why is this actually happening to me? And, you know, aside from being potentially a genetic issue, because my dad, he has also been gluten-free for a long time. I think other members of my family have been, and it just seems like something that our family just has been working with for a while. And then you start getting into then the way that wheat itself has been cultivated over the last few thousand years. And there's definitely perspectives of, you know, all the different hybridization that we've done, the genetic modification, all of the pesticides.
So wheat, that have gone let's clarify right. for our listeners. Wheat is a gluten-containing grain.
Right.
And it's the gluten-containing grains are wheat, rye, and barley.
Correct.
There's
Correct.
A lot yes, of cross-contamination with oats. Oats themselves do not contain gluten, but if you get conventional oats, oftentimes there's cross-contamination because they're often processed in similar or the same plants. People who don't understand what gluten is, so it's a really, it's, and I think you explained it well earlier, it glues things together effectively. Gluten acts like a glue, and it's a protein, but a lot of people have issues with it. And you have, from my medical perspective, a pretty typical reaction that's not classic digestion in nature. You certainly seem to have some digestive symptoms, but a lot of people think, oh, I don't have any issues with gluten. And then I ask them, how do you feel when you eat gluten-containing products? And then they start thinking about it. I'm like, oh, you know, maybe I get a headache and I get a little tired. Maybe my joints hurt, but I don't have any issues with it because I don't have tummy troubles. I'm like, no, you have issues with gluten that grain because of all the other symptoms.
Yeah.
So tell us about the grains that you've selected and then why. Why those grains?
Yeah, I guess a lot of it was just experimentation. I found that the millet, the buckwheat, and the oat together, they form really just a really nice, solid, soft, supple, and stretchy dough. So in this case, it wasn't so much why, particularly the specific benefits of each. It was just these particular grains were gluten-free, and they really made the best bread. If you try to use one grain by itself, it tends to not hold together very well, no matter what you're baking. I find that getting a blend of different grains, whether it's one, you know, two or three, sometimes more than that, but three grains, it's for me anyway, has really been the best combination, the best number of grains. So I found that those three just the best taste, the best flavor. And they, like I said before, they just kind of mirrored that taste of, the bread that I tasted at the farm the best. And once I found it, I just kind of stuck with it.
Well, that makes sense.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. How are you able to find grains that haven't been corrupted, you know, due to GMO and things in the air and all that sort of thing that can corrupt a field?
Yeah, I think there's much better certification processes that are starting to be adhered to and possible for us now. So I think, you know, 20 years ago, when I started becoming gluten-free, it wasn't certified gluten-free. I don't know if that was even a thing. There were rice cakes, you know, there was very dense rice bread and things like that, but
they were terrible. It was so bad.
Oh, it was
so bad.
Yeah. We've come a long way since then.
And I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just, you know, I've been trying to source the best ingredients. Everything's organic, certain certified gluten-free grains. Yeah. It's been a long process, but.
The other thing we focused a lot about on your breads, but I saw on your website some beautiful pictures, and please to our listeners, go to Ryan's website at homesteadoven.com. And there's some beautiful pictures of other baked goods. So what other things than breads do you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been starting to experiment with naturally leavened or sourdough pastries.
Ooh.
I've got some.
Here.
I've been really inspired to perfect the sour donut, a sourdough gluten-free donut.
Oh, that's terrible. We love donuts, of course.
Well, then you got to come check them out.
I'll be there Saturday.
I need to know.
Yes.
And I've been cinnamon rolls. Gosh, I've been really inspired to make my own seasonal.
Close the door, Will.
Yeah. To make my own seasonal organic jams to go with the bread and into the pastries also. Ugh. So I've been working on those. I'm looking around my kitchen. What else have I been working on? You know, yeah, I feel like donuts, just anything with chocolate. I've been making some chocolate breads that I think are pretty great. There's an amazing chocolate maker here in town. Johnny Epps, he does Odyssey chocolate, and I've been getting some chocolate from him. He's in the market just right next door to me. Man, his chocolate is amazing. It's the best chocolate I've ever had. So I've been incorporating some of that into my breads and pastries also.
Well, I see use the same confectioner sugar that I do. It's right behind you.
Yeah, you see the wholesome organic powder. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Right. We are officially hungry.
Yep.
You can't see us, guys. Mike and I are salivating. Ryan's like,
it's homesteadoven.com. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah.
So tell us and tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you online, phone, social media, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah.
Your emails.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm definitely at the market, X Market, every Saturday from 8 a.m. till noon. Although we sell out. Somewhere usually before 11. So there's only so much bread I could make. I'm working on moving into a commercial kitchen space and hiring someone and, you know, really taking the next step. But until then, come early, get your bread at X Market at somewhere between 8 a.m. and 11. And also, if you have any questions, you can definitely email me at homesteadoven@gmail.com. That's easy. And my website, it's got a bit more information about, like you
What's
said,
your
all,
social
all the
media
things that I make and some of the things I'm working on.
Your social media.
Oh yeah, I'm on Instagram. Yeah, thank you. I'm on Instagram and Facebook. Should just be Homestead Oven, one word.
Well, I am now following you. Vital is following
absolutely.
You on Instagram.
Yes.
Lovely.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan, so much. And folks, get down to the X Park. I say that on my radio program. All the time. That's the place to go.
Thank you so much, Ryan, from Homestead Oven. Some of the most delicious gluten-free bread that I've ever eaten. Certainly the best sourdough gluten-free bread I've ever had.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks
both
again,
so much.
Ryan.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
You're listening to Your Health on 97.9 The Ren, brought to you by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, by Be Vital Healthcare, and by Hamilton's on the Downtown Mall, featuring sustainable fine dining on Charlottesville's Downtown Mall for over 20 years. Mike and Melanie will be right back.
Support for this station today is from Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. During this COVID emergency, you can find out about Rebecca's daily hours, mail order options, and front of store pickup at 977-1965 or at rebeccasnaturalfoods.com. Rebecca stands with the community during this time of social distancing and is there to safely provide the nutritional support you need. That's Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barracks Road Shopping Center at 977-1965 or at rebeccasnaturalfoods.com.
Be Vital Health strives to support individuals, companies, and schools of all sizes in all of their health needs. They are now offering COVID testing to companies and schools. Individuals can come to the office, where in most cases, you'll be in and out in less than 30 minutes. They will also come to your company or school. You can visit them at BeVitalHealth.com or call them at 434-964-6270. Be Vital Health supports 97.9 The Wren.
Support today is coming from Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of contemporary American fine dining on Charlottesville's historic downtown mall. At Hamilton's, you'll find a seafood, steaks, and vegetarian fare with a full bar and eclectic wine list. Hamilton's supports sustainability in food production, transportation, and preparation, and in the community at large. You can see the lunch and dinner menus, make a reservation, or book the private dining space for your function all at Hamilton'sRestaurant.com.
Well, I'll tell you right now, we're so thrilled. We've got Carla Shiflett from Posture Studio, and she'll tell us how to get in touch with her at the end of this interview.
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, Carla, we're so happy to have you on the show again. I love, love, love the work that you do at Posture Studio, and you've taken care of my body on and off for years, rehabbed me from some pretty significant dysfunctions and injury. And today, this is like part two of the conversation. I want you to go deeper into how you do the functional movement that you do. You know, give us your elevator pitch for someone who doesn't understand the functional movement. You know, you do a different type of Pilates. So I want to jump right into that, go deeper into it. And after that, I want you to pick one or two injuries or conditions that you're seeing and how you treat it and how it's different than conventional Pilates or physical therapy or conventional rehab.
Functional movement is a huge catchword these days. You know, everyone's talking about functional movement. I think one of the important things is to first understand what functional movement is. And I think that for years, people just didn't really discuss that in the movement world. You know, you went in and exercised, whether it was, you know, running, going into a gym, Pilates, whatever, you would just do the exercises and they make you feel better. You know, they can make you improve your performance or they can prevent injury or keep you stronger, but sometimes they can not support you. And the things that are really important to make sure you're supported by are the things that you is to get stronger for things that you do in your everyday life. And so exercises that mimic things that we do in natural life, those are functional exercises. So let's say getting up and down from a chair looks a lot like a hip hinge or a squat of sorts. They're a little bit different, but it looks similar to that. And so practicing that in a good form is going to help you as you age, as you have injuries and maybe something happens and you're a little wobbly in your hips and you're not getting out of your chair correctly. It educates you on, okay, this is what I need to practice so that I can keep doing this the rest of my life. Functional movement is essential for humans to practice. And, you know, it used to be that people worked on farms or they, you know, that we did a lot of physical activity in our life. So we kind of maintained our functional movement patterns because that's what we did from kids on up. We moved functionally for what we were doing. But with desk sitting and modern society, we're not doing that as much. So we sit in a chair all day or maybe stand at a standing desk. And then we go to the gym and exercise. And the exercises that are being done might not support what your body's going to need long term for functionality.
That's a really good description.
Yeah, fabulous description.
It's a really good description.
That changed the way I would do everything. No.
I don't think I was explaining that well, Carla. So I apologize for all the time that I did not explain what you do correctly. So give us a couple examples, right? So we can go into like maybe the conditions or injuries in a few minutes here, but give us a couple more examples because I like what you just mentioned, getting in and out of a chair. What other common things would you say you utilize that movement, practice it with the Pilates approach to really help rehab people?
Yeah, well, I think that is where I'll answer that question, but I do think that's where my approach is a little bit different. We do Pilates to support functional movement. And so what that means is we definitely explain functional movement as we're doing the exercises. And if an exercise doesn't support something, if it doesn't make sense, we don't do it in my studio. You know, there's a lot of really beautiful, fancy Pilates exercises that sometimes the why doesn't really make sense. And so I'm not going to do that with every client. Maybe a super advanced client who comes in who wants to play, we might explore some of that. But with the majority of the clients, we're going to stick to things that are going to support functional movement. For something like getting in and out of a chair, what you'll see a lot over time is people might get, or let's explain, like maybe bending over to pick up something off of the floor, which is similar to getting in and out of a chair. It's the same movement, except you go farther, is people will tuck their tailbone under as they're sitting down or as they're squatting down. And it's really important to try to keep your back pretty straight and you hinge at the hips. And so a common complaint that we'll get is people will come in with hip pain, their hips are losing mobility, they're getting low back pain, they might get pain in their mid back, and you start looking at what they're doing and you're saying, oh, wait a minute, they're not mobilizing at their hip, they're mobilizing at their back, they're tucking their tailbone under, which means they're mobilizing their back instead of getting the movement at the hip for sitting or squatting. And so what we'll do is I'll talk to them about that without doing any Pilates. We'll discuss, okay, this is what I see going on. And then when I'm developing their programming, I make sure that I have a lot of that particular move in their program so that that becomes a new pattern for them and their body starts remembering, oh, this is how I do this.
Got it. That makes sense. So sitting, getting in and out of a chair, just simply bending down to reach something that's on the floor, you integrate the Pilates exercises that will mimic or support learning how to do that or relearning how to do that properly.
That's right.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I mean, I was a Pilates teacher for a long time, you know, going through all of the things that it takes to become a Pilates teacher. And there's lots of courses that you take and learning all of the exercises that Joseph Pilates taught, and then all the exercises that have been added over the years and the way it's changed. It's become a lot more rehabilitative. There's a lot more information about proper biomechanics and all of that. But even with all of that training, after years and years, I was still not quite teaching in that particular way. And at some point I realized, wait a minute, I need to start explaining to people what I'm seeing and explain to them why we're doing this. Yeah, Pilates is going to make you feel better. Exercise is going to make you feel better. But what's super important is understanding why are we doing this and how does it apply when I walk out of the studio? And is it supporting what I need in my life? And so we work with a lot of people who, you know, are there for pre or post rehab, but we also work with a lot of athletes, you know, like you came in as an athlete, but, you know, so we're looking at things that either there's an injury that's creating a dysfunction in natural movement patterns, or there might be an overstrengthening that's also creating dysfunction in natural movement patterns, which happens with a lot of athletes.
Can you give us one or two examples of that? Because I think you are correct, and I still roam more as a weekend warrior now, but you know, the athletic world, and I think you're really onto something that a lot of even my friends and who are also weekend warriors don't understand, that overstrengthening or overstretching. And that's one thing that I see. So give us one or two examples about that.
I wanted to say I had a theory a long time ago that, and it's a, you know, national celebrity, Tiger Woods, he beefed himself up. And I believe that was probably the cause of his back problems, because if he had stayed the skinny guy that he was with the perfect swing, I don't think he'd have the problems that he had.
I mean, sometimes, yeah, that overstrengthening, you know, if you lose your mobility, you're going to have injury. Yeah. If you become too stretched out, you're going to have injury because you don't have the strength to support the stretch. And so that is one thing that I talk a lot about with Pilates, is we're working on, there's several different aspects of strength, right? There's the strengthening part, which a lot of times is referred to as shortening a muscle to strengthen it. And then people will stretch it out so that it doesn't get too short, but also supporting the muscle through its natural length and through its natural range of motion is super important and often missed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, an example is, I use bike riding a lot because people will, there's, Charlottesville's a huge cycling community. So maybe you're sitting on a bike and you're tucking your tailbone under and riding your bike. Well, your hip flexors are going to be firing the whole time. Your quads, You might not be using your posterior chain, which is the back of your body. You might be rounding your back. And so let's say you ride like that for 4 hours or 2 hours or 1 hour, however long you're riding like that, and you're not doing a lot of other things for your exercise. Well, that's going to translate later to how you sit in and out of your chair. You're going to start tucking your tailbone under. Your hip flexors are going to start firing in a dysfunctional way. And so suddenly you're going to start having back pain. Maybe your hips aren't getting their full range of motion because when you're tucked under like that, your hips can't fully mobilize. And so you're losing range of motion. And so then other things that are going to happen is when you're standing and walking, you might not be able to pull your leg fully behind you through your stride because it's not used to doing that ever. You know, you're sitting in a chair, then you're riding a bike, and you're never doing something where you pull your leg back behind your bum. And that's a really important motion for walking. And so you'll see people start walking with their legs always out in front of them. They never really go behind their body through a stride. So it starts creating dysfunction. And so those are the kinds of things that I see and work with all of the time. And it's so cool because as soon as you start explaining it to people, people get it. There's like, oh, I didn't know I was supposed to do that that way, or I never thought about this. And as soon as they start getting it, you see that light bulb turn on, then that inspires them to be motivated, because motivation is such a huge thing. It's keeping people motivated. And if they lose that motivation, they're not going to do their exercises. But if they suddenly understand it, it's like with anything, you know, that you're learning. Once you understand it, you start going, oh, this is interesting. And you start thinking about it and you want to do it because you see the value.
I totally agree with that, that having that understanding, and I do a lot of that with my patients, is I explain why we're doing that, why we're changing your diet, why we're doing this nutrient, why we're doing this and that. And there's a little bit more buy-in is what I would say when they understand it. So walk us through your process. Someone comes in or they're interested in coming to your studio. You know, what is the process? Because people think, oh, it's a Pilates studio, but it's really very different, the experience. So walk us through a process. You know, I send a patient to you, for example, who has a knee injury or back pain. What is the process?
Well, when they first come in, you know, I'll typically sit and talk to them about, you know, I get their history, obviously, what they've done, what their injuries are. And then after I gather all that info, I definitely want to know what their goal is. You know, goals are always different. Someone has a knee issue they're trying to deal with, but they also might have a knee injury, but they are determined to be in this marathon in 2 weeks, you know. And so everyone has different goals. And so then we kind of discuss that information and discuss, you know, if I can help them with what they're looking for and what I can do. The first session, I will tell them, you know, this first session's all about me giving you a lot of information. I'm going to be looking at your movement patterns, watching you stand, sit, walk. We're going to be doing all kinds of movements, twist, rotate.
So and you're from assessing there, them. You're assessing them one-on-one. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be put into a class right away most of the time, correct?
No. Now people can, if they want to just come into a beginner class, they're welcome to. I don't require people to do a certain number of privates because I found over time that just closed a huge door. And so we have very beginner level classes. Usually people get in those classes though, and they go, oh, wait a minute. I'd like to have some privates because they start seeing the way the teacher's teaching. Maybe they're not understanding some cues that are being used because the teachers at the studio also try to teach in this way where we're all talking about functional movement patterns when we're doing stuff. So I do a movement assessment. I'll talk to them about what I see. So a big thing is usually you can just tell with basic standing what might happen when one starts walking. And you might see rotations in the hip or the spine. And we'll talk about that a little bit, talk about any injuries that have caused that, or maybe scoliosis or just various things like that that might cause that, and see what we can work with. And then from there, I'm going to then develop the program for them based on their body. And I educate the client so that when they are in a class, whether it's a class at my studio or a class at another studio or going to a gym, they know what's happening in their body. They know what they should be doing. And I think that's really essential. So because what happens in classes, any class, the teacher has to throw out basic cues, especially if a class is going fast, you know, saying something like, get your shoulders down and back, everybody. Well, maybe you don't need to get your shoulders down and back. Maybe you need to get your shoulders forward and up. And so it's really important for the client to understand their body. Am I supposed to tuck my tailbone under or am I not? Is that good for me or is it bad for me? And so I'll teach them all of those cues so that they can start thinking about what they're doing when they're going through their movement patterns. So it teaches them, so it's applying to whatever they're doing, whether it's their exercises or whether it's their daily life, washing dishes, you know, leaning over into the dishwasher, picking up their kids, that kind of stuff.
So you'll have an initial assessment. There's potentially some one-on-ones. And then after that, if need be, they can join a class, but they're going to keep in mind always the detailed recommendation or the individualized recommendations that they can then apply to the Pilates mm-hmm. movements and the Pilates exercises.
That's right. And once they're in classes, you know, they do their initial assessment or they do their first sessions. That's what they're looking for. So we really work through that stuff. And then once they're in a class, there's certain exercises that we teach always and at Posture Studio because there's human movement is human movement. And so you can start applying similar movement patterns to everyone across the board. It's just really important from the get-go that they understand this is what they need to think about when creating that movement. Versus Joe, who might be next to them, maybe he needs to send his tailbone out, where Jill might need to tuck her tailbone under a little bit to get her hips to move functionally. And so, you know, everyone in the class, they might be doing a similar movement, might be a hip hinge, but they are educated on how that hip hinge is, how they need to think about that hip hinge in their body. And so you start, if they go into a class, you'll see a lot of them doing the same exercises. Every now and again, I'll say, well, Mary, you do this other exercise while everyone else does this. But for the most part, people are going to be doing the same movement pattern exercises during a class, but they're educated on the importance of what that means for their body.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense.
Do you have mm-hmm. one example that you can think of a very common injury other than the ones you've mentioned mm-hmm. injury or complaint and, you know, mm-hmm. give us another, a couple examples, because you're giving us a lot of really good visuals and examples mm-hmm. of, you know, of how this works. Do you have another one you can think of?
I have a ton. A very common one that comes to mind immediately is pain between the shoulder blades or around the insides of the shoulder blades or pain around the, you know, that part of the back and shoulders. And typically along with that is going to be pain with the neck and maybe some weird things happening with the arm. Yeah. And that comes a lot from an idea that we should, when we stand, pull our shoulders back and think of pinning the scapular bones, the scapular bones that are, you know, the shoulder blades on the back. A lot of times people think that they need to pull them back and squeeze them together. And over time, that creates a weakness in the shoulder girdle and it starts creating a lot of pain. And so that's a huge one that I'll see when, you know, people walk in. The other thing that will happen with that particular movement, doing that over time too much, is it thrusts the breastbone and the thoracic spine, the mid spine forward, and it tends to make people lose their upper body strength. So they start kind of standing in a back bend and it resonates on down the spine. And then that is going to change how you're able to pick up things, your upper body strength. It's also going to change your walking patterns because your upper body, when you're in that position, isn't fully supported over your lower body when you walk and run. And so it starts breaking down your system, really, your functional movement patterns. So that's a huge one. And that is one that really, I do think, comes initially from cues a lot of times, you know, with, you know, I've been here kids being trained, you know, on soccer fields or outside, and I'll hear people say, get your shoulders down and back, pull your shoulders back, you know, to do this particular move. And maybe they need it to do that for that particular move, but that's not how they should walk around all the time. And so it's really about making sure that it's translated. Like, why am I pulling my shoulders down and back? Should I do that all the time? Where should they be the rest of the time? And so if you start training someone to do something like that all the time, you can break them down and not support their functional movement. So that's a huge one that I fix, or that I not fix, but I teach people about so that they can work towards fixing. And one of the big muscles that's broken down.
Mm-hmm. I certainly hear a lot of my patients, and in primary care, when I was doing a lot of primary care, upper back and neck pain, shoulder, mm-hmm. upper back, neck pain. That's certainly a mm-hmm. very, very common one.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it resonates through the neck because if the shoulders aren't supporting the weight of the arms are weights. you know, I consider the arms and legs, they're like weighted levers that are attached to our torso, which is our core. And if the arm, the weight of the arms aren't supported by the shoulder girdle, the neck starts being pulled on by the weight of the shoulders. And so as soon as people start doing that and losing their shoulder girdle strength, the weight of the arms really pull on the neck. And also that pinching back is going to create tension in the neck as well. So yeah, so that's a big one that I see a lot.
A great, great example, I think. So Carla, tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you or watch some of your videos. I know you have a lot of resources on social media and your website. So tell our listeners how they can get a hold of your studio.
So our website is posturestudio.com. And on our website, we have some videos that you can see. You can also schedule appointments there. You can follow us on Instagram or Facebook at Posture Studio. And then we also have a YouTube channel. And on the YouTube channel, I post even more educational information. And it's just Posture Studio. And our phone number is 434-293-7611. And you can also email us at info@posturestudio.com.
That's awesome. Carla, thank you so much. We're super excited to have you on here again for part two, and maybe we'll do a part three sometime soon.
Yeah, heck yeah, man. Carla Shiflett, posturestudio.com.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Really appreciate it. Thanks. Oh, cool. Man, what a great interview.
I know. I want to just keep like listening her talk, but I know both you and I have to get going.
We do, so, but we had
closing statements here.
Well, I just wanted to say we heard from Ryan Lee of Homestead Oven and Carla Shiflett from Posture Studio. Thank goodness. And what a wonderful couple of interviews there. A lot of good information for our listeners, no doubt.
Lots of good information. I really appreciated Ryan's expertise with the gluten-free baking and gluten-free grains. Yes. And I mean, Carla, what a joy to have her on our show again. And she's just a wealth of information. I learn from her every single time.
Well, it was funny because I had a physical therapist who stopped my neck pain. And one of the things that she said, when you walk around, make sure you keep that head up and your neck straight. So I had my wife look, I kind of experimented as to what the posture should be. And she said, okay, yeah, your neck is straight. And it almost feels like you're putting your nose in the air. Folks, you aren't. You're not. You're just having your neck straight. And it feels like you have your nose in the air because you've been walking around with your head bowed.
Sometimes having a good posture feels weird, right?
Yes.
But like a good colleague of ours and one of our past interviews said, you know, motion is lotion, guys. So keep moving and keep eating some of that awesome food that we're finding at our farmer's market.
Absolutely. And thanks for listening. And stay tuned for another episode of To Your Health. Bye, Mel.
Thank you. Bye. Right. Thank you.
You've been listening to Your Health with your hosts, Mike McBee and Melanie Dorian. To Your Health is brought to you by Be Vital Healthcare. Optimize health and performance by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. And by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. Be listening to 97.9 The Wren next Sunday morning at 8 for To Your Health.